laptops, thumb drives, and a wall charger, a sure sign that our nerd is here again. Bringing you the latest in computers and gadgetry, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have tons in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Steve Geske is going to talk with me about Moore's Law. Marty, the new standard of USB 4. Keith McCedor, the Apple Mini 7, it was announced, but I will tell you, one of us is not impressed. Let's talk about listener questions. Jake, he wants to know why his laptop keeps overheating. Marie, why VPN reports her location accurately instead of where she works. Michael, why does his smartwatch say his exercise goal is met when he isn't expecting it to have been met? IT workers, well, they need more mentors and to become mentors. That's on the IT Pro series. And on the Scam series, don't post the, quote, Meta can't use my info, end quote, statement. And AI isn't likely to take over many jobs at all. So let's all just let go of the hype. All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of those, feel free to check out the website at computertalkradio.com. We have the podcast up there. You can also contact us there. Of course, if you'd like to speak to me in person, the phone number is 888-NERD-888. That's 888-633-888. Let's dive into the news from the past week. Of course, I've already mentioned that the iPad Mini 7, it's officially here. And yeah, Keith and I are going to talk about that a little bit later. Now, the world of ad blocking is slowly falling apart. Google, the number one search engine, has looked the other way for years on this whole ad blocking situation, but it's clearly in their best interests to defend Google Ads, the number one search ad company. One of the top extensions for ad blocking is something called uBlock Origin, which has been blocked in the Chrome Web Store for not using the latest in backend code. Now, that latest backend code removes some of the options that you would normally use for tracking ads in web pages. This is, of course, another part of a push that appears to be coming to disable all manner of extensions in Chrome, the number one browser. So this is kind of concerning. Nearly 1 billion people use ad blockers around the world, and this will solely serve to shake up the internet with more ads, more used bandwidth, and more control for, yes, Google. Elon Musk did have their latest it was Elon Musk's Tesla, and it often seems that life does imitate art. So that announcement, that presentation, had a new robot, the robo-taxi, and the robo-van. Now, even casual observers to the event could see that the event entitled We Robot introduced products with amazing similarity to items in a movie called I, Robot. All right. So the director of the movie wasted no time responding with a complaint, and that was accompanied by a high amount of mocking in the social media world of Tesla. Now, having watched science fiction for a number of years, my whole life, I've frequently seen how concepts from past science fiction have often appeared to be prescient in their appearance to whatever we eventually wind up with. So while I'm not defending the ultimate designs, I'm also not all that surprised. I don't know why they were. Now, Steam is a major player in the gaming market, no pun intended, and they serve up more games than you could ever play. Most of my usual games are delivered on that very same platform. Now, there's a new disclaimer from Steam that reads the following. A purchase of a digital product grants a license for the product on Steam. That's a quote. And that means that you actually don't own the game. And while it occupies space on your hard drive, a lot of space, you probably never did. You plunk down $50, and if Steam decides to pull the game or decides you didn't follow their agreements, you cheated, or whatever it is, you're annoying to them, boom, that game is gone. Perhaps even your whole library. Who knows? But thus continues the constant march of how you and I don't own anything. We just haven't for a while. Lab-grown meat. I want you to think of the Impossible Burger, but there are a number of other variations. Again, this is lab-grown meat, and all of this is actually dying before our eyes. The industry is suffering, and the stats from the sales, they show the sales are plummeting, and there is low chance for profit. All right, let's forget the taste, which most people, they don't like. They're getting close, but unless the person is already vegan and looking for alternatives, what they remember meat to be like, this is really not a winner. It turns out that CO2 emissions are up between 4 times and 25 times over the amount of real meat. People are also struggling with various approaches, like the non-vegan origination of cells from animal fetuses that's used to kickstart that whole lab-grown, the bio meat. And there's rumors of bug usage, and there's the high quantity of strange-named substances in there. Lastly, Generation Z, they don't like the real, they like the real stuff way too much to go to this fake stuff. Now, another Elon Musk thing, this past week, he threatened legal action against the California Coastal Commission. Why? Well, it seems that on Thursday, they rejected a request from SpaceX for more frequent launches, up from 36 to 50. It's a little bump there. At the core of that rejection were comments made at the hearing, where many statements were made about Elon Musk's political statements online as well as elsewhere as reasoning to reject the request. Multiple commissioners defended their stance without recognizing the violation of the freedom of speech enshrined in our Bill of Rights, the fact that government can't hold our speech against us. This is clearly overreach. And I don't care what you think in regards to what Elon Musk, his political opinion is. You need to understand that this is wrong, and this could become a setback towards expanding our nation's goals of reaching out to the final frontier. This just is wrong, and it needs to be undone. It needs to be overturned very quickly. Unfortunately, the commission is very strong, and this may be a long uphill battle for him. But there's not all bad news from the government this week. The Federal Trade Commission announced this past week that they have a final click-to-cancel rule. This new rule's provisions go into effect about 180 days from now. They have to put it into the register and all of this. The various provisions set up removing many of the impediments that stand in front of us in our way when you and I wish to cancel. There's a lot of hard and fast statements in the new rule about truthful statements, knowing that you're agreeing, knowing what you're agreeing to before you're signing up, and making sure that there are quick and easy ways to cancel. This is all part of a modernization of rules, specifically a 1973 rule that takes into account all this modernization that we've evolved. The simple quote from all of that really stands out to me, quote, "Nobody should be stuck paying for a service they no longer want." Couple of quick hits here. Not surprising after Starliner and many other PR nightmares, Boeing is laying off about 10% of their workforce as they try to recover from all of these major issues. This week, Amazon had a big event. They announced amongst three Kindles. One of them, though, is called the ColorSoft, and it means what you think it does. Yes, now available in color. The teaser images for this, really impressive. I'm I'm not sure I'm going to plunk down the $250, $280, whatever it is, for one of these, because most of the stuff I'm reading is in plain black and white. And Microsoft released a figure this past week. Customers face 600 million attacks per day, both from nation states and cyber criminals. And this is against the Microsoft operating system and their various applications. So this is something to really pay attention to. Coming up next, artificial intelligence. It's not likely to take over a whole bunch of jobs, so I think we need to let go of the hype. But let me dive deeper into that in just a moment here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Article came out recently, and it was all about this economist who is laying out all of the different issues of why AI is not going to replace our jobs. He said perhaps maybe 5% of the jobs out there are going to be significantly changed by AI, but most jobs aren't going to go anywhere for a very long time. And I tend to agree with that. Maybe not in the percentage of numbers. I have no idea what figures he used to go into this deep dive, but I'm going to really talk about the fact that we've been hearing for a while, and we continue to hear about it because the news so often is designed to catch our eyeballs, to catch our ears, to catch our attention, and whip up this frenzy all about us, where we have to panic, we have to tune in, and we have to see exactly what's going on, and we start to panic. AI is going to come for our jobs like this futuristic villain in a sci-fi movie. But hold on. We shouldn't be panicking over this. We shouldn't even be worrying about this. Okay, artificial intelligence isn't some kind of magic bullet that's just going to come in, sweep through, and replace every single job. That's not how any of this story plays out. AI is like a ruthless job thief, is this big, huge headline that they keep pushing. It's simply a new gadget in the toolbox. It's something that can help us, but it's not going to take over. Let's burst the fear bubble that's going on. The idea that AI is going to snatch every job out there is science fiction. It's not reality. We see it in all of the dystopian movies that come out, and every time we turn around, yes, Skynet is coming. Look, our jobs are going to evolve. They always do. Jobs have evolved over the centuries. Back, we're talking 600 years ago, books were written by hand. Johannes Gutenberg, he came along, he invented the movable type printing press. Okay, he moved through and he made it so that the number one book of the day could be printed faster. Yes, the Bible. But it took a long time for us to get to the point where we all have a matter of 20, 30, hundreds of books available to us in our own personal libraries. We can walk into a bookstore. We can order it on Amazon. We can order thousands of books, all to be delivered tomorrow. But look, AI can't replicate everything else that comes with our jobs. Whether we're talking about human empathy, we're talking about creativity, we're talking about old-fashioned intuition. Let's look at some jobs. I just wrote down a few of them here. Healthcare professionals. All right, so AI is going to be helping diagnose or analyze data for the doctors, the nurses, the therapists. But AI has horrible bedside manner. It is not going to hold your hand in the ER. It's not going to understand the subtle emotions behind a therapy session. It's not going to say, look, we got this covered. You've got appendicitis. Your appendix is going to be taken out. Yeah, there could be complications, but you know what? I think you're going to be fine. That human touch is irreplaceable. I don't want some robot automaton going through and taking care of my appendix. I want a healthcare professional that's going to be along with me through the entire journey. And then we have the creative artists, the writers, the designers, the musicians. And yes, we are seeing different things where AI can churn out algorithms and templates, and they're going to be able to write an article. They're going to be able to, not very well, though. They're going to be able to write music, not very well. They're going to be able to write songs, but none of those are going to have the greatness that comes from having a soul, that comes from just empathizing with the characters that are being written or sung about or any of that. They don't have that spark. They can emulate it to some extent, but not like real people. Then there's teachers. You know, AI might assist in learning various things, just like Google has assisted and given us access to information across all of the span of the internet. But it's not going to replace the connection that a teacher has with their students. The lessons they teach aren't just facts. They're life skills. Their whole working with the listener, the student, the person who wants to learn plays so much into all of this. A teacher can meet the student on that same platform and help them along. Likewise, social workers. And AI does not have any emotional intelligence. And, you know, we go back to Eliza, which was often presented back 40 years ago as helping you. It's the electronic therapist. And it just repeated things back to you without understanding, without compassion, without any kind of real brain to it. And it suffered because people pitched it the wrong way. Of course, skilled tradesmen, your plumbers, your electricians, your mechanics, anything that's going to be a practical, hands-on experience. We're not going to see any kind of robot crawling under your sink and fixing a leak. We're not going to find them going and saying, hey, you've got the wrong type of wiring in this section. All of your hands-on technical services are still going to be in business. We still need a mechanic to replace out the various parts of our car, whether we're talking about the engine or the air conditioning or whatever. So let's address the big hype. AI is seemingly powerful. And yes, it's going to change how a lot of things work. But it doesn't mean that anybody should be bracing for impact. The truth is, AI's full potential is still a long way off. What we think of as AI is just simply a large language model, and it's good at looking at the English language and looking at all of the information it has and answering a number of different questions, but it isn't going to replace most of the things that are out there. You know, it's like hearing that the world's greatest pizza is coming soon. You know it'll be good, but you're not going to get it tomorrow. It's going to be 10 years from now. We eat on a daily basis, three times a day, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. But that's a lot of meals between now and 10 years from now. There's also a little bit of an irony in all of this. While we worry about AI taking our jobs, most of the applications that were coming up with AI, that are revolving around AI, that are utilizing AI, are being used to make our life easier. Not eliminate our jobs. It's more like a robot assistant rather than the Skynet robot overlords. It'll handle repetitive tasks. It'll handle the mundane, but it's going to allow us to focus on what we do best, thinking critically, solving complex problems, and simply put, being human. You need to work on this idea of collaborating with AI. You need to work with it, and you need to find what it can help you with your job to make it just a little bit better. Is it going to help you with flipping burgers? Is it going to help you say, would you like fries with that? No. But crunching numbers and making different reports, yeah, it could help a lot with that. For right now, it's your co-pilot, not your replacement. So let's just dial it back a little bit and let's just chill. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Keith Amsidora joins me now here on Computer Talk Radio. And Keith, we got an announcement out of Apple earlier this week, something I've been waiting for this. I've been excited for this. Go for it.
Well, you should be, Benjamin, because the iPad mini has not been refreshed for a little more than a little while now, and we've got some significant bumps in improvement.
Hold on. So let me go through my side of this. I said, "All right, honey, I found my birthday present. I found what I want."
The kids.
No. my son is like 5 inches taller than I am, and it could shrink him down. I have no idea where you went with that. So I told her I want this, and she goes, okay. And then a day went by, and I looked at the specs.
Right.
And while it's a significant bump over what it was, that's when the crickets started to arrive, because it isn't anywhere near what the current iPhone is, what the iPhone 16 is. It's the CPU of the previous phone.
Right.
It is actually it's not even the same CPU, because they've downgraded it. So it's one GPU less than than the iPhone 15 Pro Max was, and they didn't really adjust a whole lot other than that.
Well, here's the thing, Benjamin. The A17 Pro in the new iPad Mini 7 is going to give you a 30% speed boost in the CPU performance over the outgoing iPad Mini 6, which had the A15 Bionic chip.
Yeah, but when they came out with it, the A15 was the same as what was in the iPhone back then.
Well, you keep comparing the iPad to the iPhone, and they've got different use cases. I mean, sure, they'll run comparable apps and such, but I've got a 13-inch iPad Pro that I pretty much leave on my kitchen counter because it's my Netflix and YouTube watching device when I'm cleaning up the kitchen after my wife makes dinner. But I'm not using it the same way I'm using my phone. So I think it's not a good comparison.
So, I mean, I look at it and I see this. The thing is, I'm struggling. It's not revolutionary, but it's not even, I would say it's evolutionary, but not in the evolutionary that I would have hoped for.
No, but if you look at the
specifications, it's not in the exciting realm. It's not. It's no longer what I would have hoped it would be.
Yeah, true. But if you look at these devices side by side, I mean, right out of the gate, you're losing the blue in favor of you're losing the pink in favor of blue, and a blue iPad is important, Benjamin. I'm kidding. No, the reality of it is yes, a lot of the specifications are the same. But there are some significant changes to the specifications.
Right now the big selling point is, okay, the new processor can run Apple Intelligence, except Apple Intelligence isn't here yet.
And it's got twice the memory of the outgoing device.
Everything I'm hearing, and storage, but...
Apple Intelligence is going to be coming in the 18.1 general release. I don't know if you're going to see it in the beta release, but every expectation is that we're going to see that probably before Thanksgiving. So we're not that far away. We're only talking weeks away from Apple
Intelligence. But that's not going to be the full Apple Intelligence either. It's going to be a subset of it.
Well, they're going to roll it out as it's ready. They're not going to throw everything all out and hope it works somewhat decent.
No.
They want it to outperform because they know they're coming late to the game. But Apple's always said, you know, we're not here to be first. We're here to be best. So I think Siri will finally start to outclass Echo.
In the past, and we're talking, we can look back over the generations of the iPhones, the iPads, across the Macs. When they announced something, when they announced new hardware and with new features, you know, the new software came with everything that they had promised.
Right.
It was all there. This latest iteration with Apple Intelligence has been added in and it's being slowly rolled out. They've got the new iPhone 16 is here with Apple Intelligence, except it doesn't have it coming out of the box. You have to wait for it to arrive, and it's not going to arrive all at once. And the same thing with this iPad. They've moved into this slow burn, slowly evolving situation instead of where we used to see all kinds of new features. This is going to be on the shelves. You're going to be able to get this Friday. When you got it, you had so much more. And now we're not. We're not getting it.
Benjamin, be Apple in your mind for a second. You know, people demand this immediacy because 20 years ago, Apple used to put out updates. Like even just macOS and iOS updates weren't coming out annually. It wasn't until a few years later Apple started conditioning almost in a Pavlovian way to expect a new update of every operating system annually on a cycle. And there's a lot to be jammed into that short time span. So if you're Apple and you're smart, you're taking what little innovations you've got at this stage in the game and you're rolling them out in a very systematic, stretched out way. A, so you don't jump the gun and put something out before it's fully cooked. And B, so that you don't get to the point where, oh, we released something so big and now we've got nothing to follow it with.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to think on this. I have to process it. I want, because my old iPad is dying, I want to go for this, but I'm struggling. I'm not feeling it yet. I have to think on this purchase.
You should.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That is just one of the ways you can reach out to us to communicate with us. Of course, we answer any computer questions you may have. We will address your technology concerns. That is a passion that we have here to inform people and make them aware of all of the different things that might be going on in their computer. Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty,
hey, I have a riddle for you.
Yes.
Actually, it's more of a joke. It's about the nearsighted nerd who walked into a bar and said, "Oh, who left that bar there?"
Okay. On that note, what do you have for us this week other than strange jokes?
Well, I wanted to lead in with something corny because the other question comes up, what's USB for? And, you know, it's obviously for connecting things, but that's not what it's about. Hey, folks, there's a new thing coming, a new player in town called USB numeral 4. The USB you have now is USB 3. USB 4 is new and coming, and it comes in flavors that go from 20 to 80 gigabits. But at 80 gigabits,
that's a nice throughput, yeah.
If 80 gigabits is what you intend to do over the cable, that cable is only going to be about 15 inches long.
So, yeah.
There's a lot to know about it, and let me try to dive in, but get into some specific examples very quickly.
Sure, yes.
From some old friends of ours. Now, if you follow all the tech factlets about USB 4, you might be salivating over the bandwidth, but as the song says, that ain't necessarily so. You might get 20 gig, maybe 10, because those tiers are also part of the standard. It offers... USB 4 offers two PCIe lanes, 20 gig each, and then there's tunneling, and there's been an expansion on the spec since then to get the 40 and 80. But unless you're creating something end-to-end that should have been over a different wire, don't worry about that part.
Yeah.
Just don't worry about it. PD, power delivery for is 100 watts.
Okay, nice.
And you can generally drive two 4K displays, but that depends on whether you want to include high dynamic range, HDR, because that's a bandwidth eater. Extra bright, direct sun in the camera kind of shots have the big bloom of brightness, and that needs HDR to be reproduced in full, and it doesn't want that going both ways. Now, the spec can drive a 4K display
at 240 frames per second.
Okay. That's very nice.
And it's compatible with DisplayPort 2.1, but it's range limited. So some of its specs require cord lengths less than a couple of feet. When you have expectations for it, ask before you buy.
Sure. Yeah.
Best advice. Now, I want to talk about USB 4 and actual products. I got a small selection in from our friends at Anker, A-N-K-E-R.
Nice, great, nice guys, definitely.
Yes. Got a couple of cables, 3.3 feet long. These are Series 5 cables. They're made for 20 gig. They're not made for the 80. I got the Anker 556. That's their product ID. I wish they had names. and we're about to see the difference between a hub and a docking station. The 556 is an 8-in-1 USB 4 hub, which means where it goes into the computer, it's plugging into USB-C connector, because USB 4 standard connector is USB-C connector. It supports an 8K 30 frame per second HDMI, an 8K 30 frame per second DisplayPort, Ethernet, a 10 gig USB-C, two 10 gig USB-A, and it's got power delivery input for up to 100 watts. So that is the hub. Now, the 568 11-in-1 USB 4 USB-C docking station has 100-watt charging, two 30-watt charging ports, two DisplayPort 1.4, one HDMI 2.0. So you can run one monitor at 8K 30 on DisplayPort or 4K 60 on HDMI, or two monitors at 4K 60 or three at 4K 30. You want three more monitors? Plug them in. There's two 10 gig USB-C ports, two USB 2A ports, two 5 gig USB 3A ports. All in a little thing you can put on your desk and not have to worry about your coffee falling off the edge.
I am kind of puzzled at the, so we can do one 8K 30, but only three 4K 30s. I imagine there's probably some overhead, probably some background.
Well, there's only one USB-C wire for it all to go over.
Oh, yeah. No,
so that's where the bandwidth gets constrained. DisplayPort 1.4 is pretty generous, and if you remember, DisplayPort 1.4 is the native on USB cable way to send video. DisplayPort, not necessarily 1.4. So one monitor at 8K 30.
Yeah.
There's not enough bandwidth for 8K 60. If you want 4K 60, you can deal with that on two monitors at once.
Sure,
you
know, sure, yeah, yeah.
Your port. If you're okay with 4K 30, you can have three of those. So it's, you know, how fast do you blink?
Yeah. So it looks like we are starting to get USB 4 items out on the shelf.
It's starting to appear in notebooks and computers.
So definitely very timely that you're bringing this up. It's been a long time in coming.
Yeah. Yes, development. Development. Well, who knows? Maybe it's a pandemic thing, but
Sure. Yeah.
I really salute the guys on the USB IF who put so much work into the standard, working with the vendors to find out what's possible, what's desirable.
Definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody. They can, and they will use a variety of different tools to identify those people who will be marks for their future endeavors and efforts. The latest thing is not the latest thing. It's existed around for, a very, very long time. And it is a request for you to put up a notice on your Facebook page. And it goes like this. Goodbye, Meta AI. Please note an attorney has advised us to put this on. Failure to do so may result in legal consequences. As Meta is now a public entity, all members must post a similar statement. If you do not post at least once, it will be assumed that you are okay with them using your information and photos. I do not give Meta or anyone else permission to use any of my personal data, profile information, or photos. I will tell you first off, that little posting does nothing. That little posting that you might put up on your Meta page or your, what we think of as Facebook, or whether it's there or any of the many other social media platforms, it holds no legal weight whatsoever. But let's put that aside. Let's even forget about the idea of, what harm could it do? Here's the thing. It actually identifies you as someone who is gullible. It identifies you as vulnerable. You are one of the easier profiles to attack. Whether it's hackers going, okay, this is someone who isn't well-versed in the whole world of the internet, the whole realm of passwords, the entire experience of computing. So they'll try to hack your account. But let's say they don't even try to hack your account. They've already put a target on you for going forward because you shared this information, because you, this is just simply not true. So they're looking for people who do this. And what happens is they'll use anything they can to find out who you are. And then they'll start trying to attack you. How? Well, they'll send you spam, and they'll send you any kind of different ways that they can reach out to you. They'll try to somehow insinuate themselves into your life somewhere, somehow. And then they lay up the next layer of the scam. And this is something that when you post something like this, yes, we know that the bad guys are using this. They're using this as a tool to attack people. No, it's not the direct tool. It's not like sending you something and you click here and all of a sudden you've got a virus. It's nothing like the old days. They're using this as just an identifier of someone who they can leverage for their future exploits. And it's not going to be today. It may not be next week. It may not be for a couple of months. It may be a year down the line. But make no mistake, the bad guys are out to get you. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, if you wish to reach out to us, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. We also have the podcast there. We have all of the news articles that we reference at the beginning of the show. We've got various little commentary and notes here and there as well. Again, computertalkradio.com. Also, if you want to reach out to us, the phone number, 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-6373-888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of us, all of our lives. And Steve Keske joins me now to make good on that with a topic that, well, Steve, I talk about Moore's Law all the time, and every once in a while I go a little too far without explaining what Moore's Law is.
Yeah.
Oh, do you want to explain it?
In a nutshell,
yes.
Moore's Law states that the number of transistors on a circuit board will double every 2 years.
Yeah.
Right.
And generally, although for many years it's been revised down to about 18 months, it will vary up to 2 years at times. But but the general law there has held solid. Well, he expected it to hold solid for 10 years or so.
Easy.
That was 50 plus years ago, something like that. More than that.
Remember, okay, when I was growing up, today we have iPads and all this kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, back when I was growing up, the transistor radio was the really big thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the average transistor radio back in the early 50s. Mm-hmm. Had four transistors in it.
Mm-hmm.
Only four.
Mm-hmm.
How many is in the average home PC right at the moment?
Oh, the CPUs themselves, without getting into any of the other processing, the CPUs themselves are in the, I think it's been a while since I've checked the number on it. I'm thinking it's somewhere around 8 million in the current generation of processors, but I could be off by quite a bit on that one.
They range from 500 million to 1 billion.
Like I said, I could be off by a little bit.
And any one CPU.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So you think that from 54 to 2024...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's 456, 66, that's 70 years.
Yeah.
In 70 years, you've gone from 4 to a billion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and Moore's Law extends in so many different directions.
Oh, yeah.
We think of it just as the transistors. Mm-hmm. We think of it just as that level of the amount of computing power, but it actually applies in a number of different directions.
Oh, yeah.
For the longest time, standard hard drives went in that direction. And that was before we even went to the idea of solid-state hard drives. And then, of course, solid-state hard drives are made up of transistors, basically.
Yep.
And they're moving at that exact same pace. But let's think about something else in regards to our computers, our monitors. Oh, yeah. Our LCD monitors are also progressing at that same pace, as well as a lot of different things throughout the technology industry. And they basically are also improving on the cost. So if you think about it, the 2K 43-inch monitor over the course of time became a 43-inch 4K monitor just because we were able to make those pixels smaller over the course of time and to increase that resolution. So all of this starts just piling on each other. That's why we are seeing such amazing advances over the years in computing, in display, in hard drives, in memory, in our GPUs. Everything, smartphones also include that entire situation as well.
Now, here's a little tidbit to think about.
Yeah.
As we have progressed in science,
yeah,
we have been able to grow our own diamonds.
Yes.
And we make them harder and more efficient
mm-hmm.
than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're now talking about on that same hard drive you got.
Yeah.
Coating it with diamonds.
Okay. Yeah.
And now you store that light in those little diamonds that are all embedded in that little disc. And you're thinking now that I can store 10 times what they're storing now.
Mm-hmm.
Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
More and more. And I foresee if they keep working the way they are with their diamond production,
mm-hmm.
I can see us going to a possible light circuit versus an electrical circuit.
Sure, sure. And there have been different experiments in that direction. There are people actively trying to do that.
Yes.
It is very amazing how technology continues to shift. We start talking about Moore's law, and that is just it's nothing but a reflection of how fast technology is moving.
Oh yes, just think of the spacecraft.
Yeah.
Okay, the first ones going up only had 64K.
The space shuttle was 32K.
Yeah.
The processor. Yeah, I'm sitting up on a shelf that I hear of in my office. I have a Terrace 80 Model 100. It actually has the same CPU and the same amount of memory. This laptop that was available to the general public in 1985 for, I think it was around $800 retail, that had the same computing power as the space shuttles did when they were first going up in space.
Right. Yeah,
I love that tidbit about it.
And that tells you, too, how our technology is totally expanding.
Sure.
You know, and that really starts me thinking about a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like going to Mars and things on this order and all that kind of computing power that's going to necessary for going to those places.
Yeah. I look at, you know, and one of the things that I'm going to talk about this in the coming month or so, I've got this item which I did a bunch of research on for talking about this a while back, and that was, we are at the point now, the trip to the moon was, other than the guy, the three guys just flipping switches and, you know, and communicating back to Houston, was somewhat, it didn't have a whole lot of time for boredom. But when we're going to Mars, there's going to be tons of boredom. So how do we deal with that? Well, we're going to have to send entertainment with them. We're going to have to send them with a library of books that is amazing. Think of like a super Kindle, and we're going to have to provide the same in the form of movies and television shows, because if somebody is working nonstop for that kind of distance, they need the downtime. They need the breaks. They can run a number of different science experiments, but if they don't chill for a little bit, once a week, they're going to burn out by the way before they get to Mars.
Absolutely. And they also have to keep into physical conditioning, you know, treadmills and weights and all that.
Yeah. But as far as the technology side is concerned, we're finally there where we can provide enough distractions via the technology, enough Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and Disney Channel, Disney Plus, whatever, to really fill the time. Anyways, that's all the time we have for this week. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Jake reached out to me, why does my laptop keep overheating and shutting down? And we can apply this across the entire realm of PCs and technology. There's a lot of things that come along with this. Jake reached out to me at computertalkradio.com. You can do it too. So, yeah, why does it overheat? Why does it shut down? And look, you know, it's like trying to run a marathon and it's summertime, you're wearing a heavy winter coat, and your system, whatever it is, it's struggling to keep up. It just can't handle the heat. So it gets heat stroke and it just passes out. This is a common thing. It's built in. And I can tell you that there are a number of different sensors. Once your system gets over a certain heat, across whether we're talking about your smartphone or your desktop or your laptop, to protect the system, it'll just say, yep, you're not going to work for a little while. You're going to let this thing cool off. And that's fine. But we need to also address the problem. Why is it doing this? Why is it experiencing this heat? And the first one that comes to mind is cleaning out the vents. And I saw a video just in the last week, and it was of a laptop that had been pulled apart, and the technician was looking it over, and rather than just blowing the dust all over the place, they grabbed a set of tweezers, and they were plucking out of the fan, out of the cooling fan, this big, huge, just bulk of dust that was all stuck to itself. It was clearly clogging up the fan so badly, I'm not even sure that that fan could have spun. And it was, I'm going to tell you, I was watching it and I was grossed out. I was just like, oh, this is disgusting. And, you know, maybe it is just dust, and maybe it's just that kind of debris that gets in there, clogs the vents, restricts the airflow. But I struggle with that. So what can we do? You don't actually usually have to pull the system apart for especially for laptops. But if you can, if it's within your realm, just to pop the back off of it to see any different areas which are clogged up, this would be good. You don't have to. You can look into the vents. You can see there's a lot of dust in there. There's a lot to be concerned about. And then you grab that canned air. You use that compressed air to just clean out the vents. And that is one thing you can start to do to improve cooling. Next up is you need to make sure that the airflow is suitable. All right. So years ago, we used to build desks that we would keep our computers in. You know, different companies would provide computer desks, and the computer would be hidden away, and it would be locked into this sealed cabinet with next to nothing for airflow. So when your computer is taking in cool air and kicking out hot air, and it only has that little cabinet space to do it with no additional ventilation, it's pulling in cool air, kicking out warm air. The warm air gets pulled in again because it circulates around, and then it's kicking out warmer air, and then it's kicking out hotter air as it just continues to build. That's not good. That will kill the system fast. But we've got other ways that we're dealing with this same concept. Even today, we see people on a regular basis. We can watch most any movie, and somebody's just poking away on their laptop, and they set their laptop down on the bedspread, and then they go off, and they leave the computer going, and that's not good for the computer either. Anytime you're blocking off those vents, even if you're using a laptop as a laptop, you need to make sure that you are allowing that circulation of air to go through. You're allowing that to all just all of that heat to dissipate. And that's so very key. Next up, along with this, you need to make sure that you, if you've got a laptop that particularly runs hot or any kind of system, you can look into various cooling measures. And there are cooling pads for laptops. If you've got a computer that you've overclocked, you've got that running faster, or you've upgraded the video card from whatever was in there to this big, huge behemoth of a GPU that just kicks out all kinds of wonderful graphics, but also wonderful amounts of heat. You need to think about the cooling options that are available to you. And there are a ton of these. People have been doing water-cooled and oil-cooled. Mineral oil is something that is used a lot. It doesn't conduct the electricity, but it does conduct the heat. So it's a little bit safer, and we've seen this. If you're looking into any of these cooling systems, by the way, I am going to tell you, make sure you go to a company that is used to setting up these cooling systems. You're going to look for a couple of different options, a local computer repair place that specializes in the more racier computers, the faster computers, I mean by that, the computers that are used for gaming, for Bitcoin, for really pushing the envelope of computing, because they will have experience. You're not going to be able to take this on down to Best Buy. You can take it down to Micro Center. I know that they do have experience there. Look for some place which is filled with the nerds, not people who are just salespeople. And avoid the temptation. A lot of them will say, well, it's just running hot. You've got to replace your system, your entire system. No, you can get cooling systems, and that's okay. I mean, you do need to think about, okay, is this computer 7 years old? Yeah, if it's 7 years old and it's running hot, the applications have evolved and they're going to be more demanding. You're going to need to need to be thinking about this all the way along. A two-year-old system, yeah, it might be worth putting in those cooling systems. There are a couple of things like thermal paste. We've talked about that over the years. It becomes less and less of a concern these days. But again, if it's an older system, that might be an issue. If you have some particular attachment to the system, you might replace the thermal paste. I'm not going to go through that today. But that's there. That's available. Monitoring the temperature is something that you should take note of. If you're on a Windows system, there's a program called Speccy, S-P-E-C-C-Y. I talk about that every once in a while. And it will give you a lot of the readouts of the different temperature levels within your system. You want to keep those below a certain level, and that's fine. Another thing to really start thinking about, too, is what are the applications that you're running? If they are resource heavy and they're running in the background, that can build up the heat. A lot of the video games, some of those higher end video games, will overdrive your system. It will run it at a much higher CPU level, a higher GPU level. And all of that processing, all of that thinking that your computer is doing is going to develop heat. Every time we do those little bits of calculations, it adds just a very micro degree of heat. But if you keep running a ton of those applications and they're doing a ton of those calculations, yeah, all of that starts to mount up. So monitor the temperature, monitor your CPU utilization, monitor your hard drive utilization. Again, Speccy can help with that. That's just one. That's a program that's available for free. And just think about shutting down any applications that are really loading up your system. Like, these are just a few different steps. Look, you apply these, hopefully your laptop is going to stop overheating and it should be able to handle those tasks like a properly dressed champion marathon runner, cool and composed without a worry. Again, you know, be open to exploring around those options. Again, the older the system, the more likely it's going to be susceptible to this. And again, this applies to the laptops, but also the desktops, and yes, to our smartphones and tablets. I have overheated my phone a few times and it said, hey, I've had enough. And that was actually usually because it's been sitting out in the sun or near another heat source. But that's another story for another day. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Marie reached out to me. You can do it too. The phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, Marie's question was about trying to understand about work VPNs, how they work. And in particular, she ran into some weird issues. She was trying to VPN into the office, and she had to do some work for a particular website, which said, hey, you're not in this particular state, you're in this other state. So these other rules apply, not the rules for the state that she's dealing with. So she was trying to understand why it would show, even though it's a VPN, a virtual private network, it's a work VPN, and it would show that she was not in the state where she was working, but where she lived. In this day and age, we have a lot of people who work remote. I work remote for a company that is 900 miles or so away from where I live. And this is a common thing. This is a growing issue for all of us. So what's going on here? So there's a couple of different ways that companies' websites can figure out where you're at. One of them is by the origination IP address. And that origination IP address should have shown over the work VPN as being in the state where Marie's company is, not where Marie lives. Oddly enough, it didn't even show in her state. It showed in the next state over. So why is all of this weird stuff happening? So there's a couple of things that happen along the way. And one of the things is your information going out to websites for some VPNs may not go through directly through your work office. Yes, they track what's going on, but sometimes they offload some of these different details for like websites, information which you're not actually actively working on the network, resources like the file servers and email and stuff like that. They go, oh, we don't need to monitor all of the web traffic, so we'll just route that outside of the VPN. And this is something that smaller companies, they will take advantage of that kind of offloading to your local internet service provider. That way they can reduce the amount of workload that is going through their firewall systems, their VPN systems, and allow more people to access the resources in the office directly via remote, if that makes sense. I hope that makes hope that works out for you. So it's not going all the way across the country and then back again to wherever the website is. It's going, if it's work information, to file servers and email and stuff like that. It's going to your office. But if it's going out to the internet, great. It'll just kick it off and it'll just say go to the website directly. Now, that's just one thing that can happen. Another thing that people can experience, which is kind of the deeper, darker side of the internet, and that is that your browser on your computer reveals a lot of information, even if it's connected via VPN, because there's a lot of different things that are going on when you load up your browser. So if you're loading up your browser and you go to a website, it is going to look at your computer. It is going to reveal a lot of different information that you might not even be aware that it's giving out. For instance, yes, they can tell where you're at frequently, but they can also tell what version of what browser you're working with. They can tell what version of Windows or Mac OS that you're running. They can tell a lot of different things in regards to what's your PDF handler, what is your drive size. So how much memory do you have? A lot of these different things. Do you have cookies enabled on your system? And this amount of information that leaks out is far higher than you could imagine. We're talking about your processor, your GPU, that's your graphics card, and things like that. That is how Google is able, and Facebook and all of these other different major social media networking and any other, whoever it is that you're dealing with out there, if they are a big company, they are working to leverage that information that they can. So Google has a fingerprint, if you will, of my system. After a while, they can tell exactly who I am because they're accumulating all of these different little pieces of that fingerprint, and they can tell if I go traveling across the country and I go and I stay in a hotel, they can tell that that is my system. They know because they've got so many of these different details that they pull in. And you may think, okay, it's not able to identify me because I'm not giving out any of that information. but you are. You're not giving out your name. You're not giving out your phone number. You're not giving out your social security number. But if you do that enough at your home, it figures out eventually, yeah, that's this system is here. This is this system right here. There is no other system out there that's going to have quite this configuration. So you go to the hotel and you start doing whatever it is that, you know, whether it's work or buying tickets on an airline site or whatever it is, they know that that is your computer. That's your laptop that you took with you. This is something that is hard for any of us to really trick, to stifle, to prevent, because all of this information is considered to be public information. And that's rather unfortunate. That's how they are able to serve you the same ads, whether you're at home or you're out on the road or you're wherever you are in the world. They're going to serve up the same ads to you. So if you're looking for a car, they're going to have all of that car information, what kind of car you're likely to drive, how much your income is, and all of that. The amount of information that Google and Facebook and all of these companies has on you is amazing. No, not amazing. It's very, very, very scary. But there's not much we can do. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how IT is evolving, or sometimes how it needs to evolve. I've been in the industry for over 35 years as an IT professional, and that is actually quite a long time. I've seen so many different things over the years. It has been just an amazing just experience for me. And there are different companies I've worked for which treated me as just a technical resource. Oh, we need this server fixed. We need this taken care of. We need you to go fix printers, desktops, fix the network, whatever it was. And it was all a matter of that technical knowledge. But over the years, I've built up a set of knowledge that allows me to go forward and work in a mentorship kind of role, a guiding role. As a matter of fact, where I am in the industry is a little bit more guiding. It's a little bit more observing. It's a little bit more of seeing what has happened over my career and making sure all of those different pitfalls that we've run across in all of those different situations doesn't happen again. We don't fall into those different holes and can't find a way out. So mentorship, and this is in the form of active mentoring, but also passive mentoring. This is an area which needs to be focused on across IT. We need to be finding a lot of the different ways where we can coach all of the different IT people to do better for themselves, for their department, for their IT department, and for the company, but all of technology. And yes, you may say, okay, isn't mentorship just like babysitting? Well, okay, no, not really. It's not handholding. It's about guiding. It's about educating. It's like handing them the map, but letting them figure out how to get from point A to point B. This is allowing the person to develop, the person who's being mentored, the mentee, to discover new ways to do things that they haven't thought about before. These are soft skills that you're going to be just using, but also relating over to those other people along in there. Yes, I can go and I can say, you need to do this, 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 and this. And that's how you get it done. But in IT, if I give those, you know, four instructions, this, 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 and this, that is only if everything works the way it should. In IT, we know that it doesn't. In IT, there are so many different interrelated things, some of which have bugs, and somewhere along the way, it's all going to fall apart. So I have to say, you're going to do these four things, but somewhere along the way, something might break. So what do you do if that third one breaks? Okay, so think about that. Tell me how you're going to handle it if this goes wrong. Okay, we can back out or we can change this. We can do whatever. Look, I want them to think about what they're working on instead of just following the instructions. So along with all of that hardcore technology that one must have in the IT industry, we need to, and there are companies that are starting to look for those. We need to chase after those soft skills, that ability to communicate like a human being. And yes, it's going to involve patience. It's going to involve building people up. It's going to involve talking to people. these are problems. All of those are problems with people who are in the IT industry. We're not used to building people up. We're not used to communicating on the phone. We're used to communicating via Teams or email or whatever else it is that's out there. Slack. You know, it doesn't matter which one. So in a way, we have to juggle a lot of the different expectations, and we have to shift these, and we need to be encouraging all of these different things. Look, if I'm the only person who knows how to do that ABCD set of instructions, what's going to happen if I'm not around? Chaos. But if I start to help people understand, this is what we're going to do, this is why we're doing it, this is how you're going to do it, and this is what you do if something goes wrong, I start building better people who are going to have confidence in their problem-solving skills. They're going to be far more competent than when we started before. Like, there's nothing more satisfying than seeing someone who used to stumble and they used to trip over all of the different things in their job, and now they are running at full speed because of your guidance. This is a really big thing. Mentoring is not about just the people who are learning either. It's about the person who's teaching. And the more that someone teaches, the more that they learn. And when you see someone succeed because of your help, your setup, your mentorship, it feels like you're passing on a torch and you're lighting the way for the future. And I'll tell you, that has been just a joy for me over the years, and I hope for many years to come. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost? It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Michael reached out to me. Why does my smartwatch congratulate me for hitting my exercise goal when I've been sitting at my desk all day? Michael reached out to me. He actually reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com, where you can ask your questions as well. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. So Michael's question about his smartwatch, and on the Apple, it's closing the rings, and I don't know what it is on the Android watches, but there's we've had Fitbit, and we've had all of these different trackers, and I hesitate to narrow it down to any one of these. And, you know, in a situation like this, I'm sure that it's feeling like your watch is handing out a participation trophy while you're just trying to get through your emails. Or maybe more like this. It's like your teacher giving you an A+ for running a marathon you never ran. It feels good. But you know it's not right. So we have to dive into a lot of these different directions. We have to piece apart, what does the technology do? How does it do it? What is it doing to us? I do understand that some of the smart watches out there, they do allow for recalibrating the motion sensors, and that may reduce the false step detection. You also need to look through different things. Maybe there's a sensitivity setting. There's something that is going along and, okay, you know, he mentioned about sitting at his desk all day. Maybe it's interpreting the hand movements, like typing, as actually being steps. I don't really know on this. I learned on a manual typewriter. I know there's a lot of hand motions that are built into how I type. I type a little bit harder, a little bit stronger than people who are just moving along with very sensitive keyboards. So perhaps that's doing it. There are abilities to turn off the auto detection features of the activity that's going on, and that may be an issue there. Also, I mean, we should never look past some of the really basic portions of technology that we apply across the board, whether we're talking about the smartphones or we're talking about our computers. The whole idea of, have you turned it off and turned it back on again? And just doing a soft reset, a reboot, anything there that may clear up any of the different glitches that maybe have crept into the step counting, the exercise tracking algorithms that are built in. Of course, a firmware update is something that we should always take into consideration. Some of the different firmware releases along the way of every bit of our hardware will throw things off in ways we never imagined. So, yes, definitely check for and install any updates that might actually help fix the missteps in this activity tracking. There's so much there. And I want you to have the ability to know that you can rely on your technology. That's part of why I'm here, why we do this show, Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.